Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Jeremy Scahill. Scahill is a Polk Award-winning investigative journalist. He's a frequent contributor to The Nation magazine and a correspondent for Democracy Now! Last month, he published his first book entitled Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, published by Nation Books. This is an unauthorized story of the epic rise of one of the most powerful and secretive forces to emerge from the U.S. military-industrial complex. And many of you probably remember the incident that brought the company to the public's attention. It was that infamous March 31, 2004 ambush of four Blackwater soldiers in Fallujah, Iraq. They were murdered and their charred bodies were left to dangle on a bridge. We'll talk more about this incident later in the show. But first, I'd like to welcome Jeremy Scahill, who I'm speaking to from his book tour, where he's currently in Toronto, Canada. Welcome to the show, Jeremy Scahill. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be with you, Tish.
Now, I want to begin by talking about Blackwater's beginnings, more specifically its founder, Eric Prince. Tell us about him.
Yeah, well, Blackwater was founded by, as you say, Eric Prince, and he's believed to be, if not the wealthiest, one of the wealthiest people ever to serve in the U.S. Navy SEALs. But he's not just simply a veteran of U.S. Special Forces. This is a guy who has a deep history with right-wing causes, Republican politics. He comes from a family in the state of Michigan, and his father, Edgar Prince, was a pull-yourself-up-by-your-bootstraps capitalist who built up a manufacturing empire that serviced the auto industry in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. The company was called Prince Manufacturing. And what that business was perhaps best known for was inventing the now ubiquitous lighted sun visor. All of us essentially ride around, and if we drive cars, with a little bit of Blackwater in our vehicles, because Eric Prince's father invented that lighted sun visor. When you pull it down, it lights up. That's his family. They also had inventions that didn't quite work out, like a ham deboning machine. But anyway, they built up this very successful company. And so young Eric Prince watched his father become a very successful businessman and run this very successful company. But more important than watching the company was watching as his father used the business as a cash-generating engine to fuel the rise of the religious right in the United States and to fund the Republican Revolution of 1994. So, for instance, his father gave about $400,000 to Gary Bauer to start the Family Research Council. And young Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater, was one of the first interns under Gary Bauer. His family was very close to James Dobson, whose focus on the Family Prayer Warrior Network has become a major force in the evangelical, right-wing evangelical world. And also, Eric Prince was an intern at George H.W. Bush's White House, but he complained that it wasn't conservative enough for him on issues like gay rights and the environment, the budget. And so Eric Prince grows up in this house where his dad is a major player in Republican politics and Christian right politics. And then his sister Betsy marries Dick DeVos, heir to the Amway fortune. Amway was the single greatest bankroller of the Republican Revolution. She marries into the DeVos family, and these two families sort of merge together in Michigan in a manner that was sort of common among the monarchies of old Europe. Mm-hmm. And these two families together built up a formidable right-wing Christian empire. Eric Prince ends up joining the Navy SEALs. He runs around the world. He goes to Haiti, Bosnia, the Mediterranean. But then in 1995, his father passes away, dies of a heart attack, and Eric Prince's wife had cancer. So Prince comes back from the SEALs, goes back to Michigan to sort through the family business and deal with the personal crisis. They end up selling the company business, the family business, for about $1.3 billion in cash to Johnson Controls. Eric Prince then takes his share of the fortune, goes out to North Carolina, calls up a bunch of his buddies from the Special Forces community, and in 1996 he incorporated what was at the time called Blackwater Lodge and Training.
Hmm. So his reason for doing this was because he loved being in the Navy SEALs, or did he want to carry on this right-wing agenda in this way?
Well, I think both. I mean, Eric Prince is I think by all accounts a very visionary guy, and I think he's a serious military enthusiast. But what's interesting is that the early company literature indicates two things. One is that the original vision of Blackwater was to be a sort of sportsman's paradise, an outdoor shooting range. He had originally purchased about 5,000 acres on the Great Dismal Swamp of North Carolina. But also the company sought to take advantage of what they foresaw as accelerated government outsourcing of security training and law enforcement training. And so those were the early origins of the company. And they operated in relative obscurity until 1999, when the Columbine shooting happened. And after the Columbine shootings, Blackwater responds by constructing a mock high school on their compound. They called it RU Ready High.
Yeah.
And they invited law enforcement agents from around the country to come and train on how to face down against the violent high school youth of America. And that was the first of what would sort of be annual tragedies or incidents that Blackwater would end up profiting from.
So did they become the Bush administration's main private guard company in Iraq because of his father's connections, or had he started making these connections as well with George W. Bush and his administration?
No, I don't even think it necessarily was. I don't think the defining factor was his support for Bush's campaigns. I mean, Eric Prince gave tens of thousands of dollars to Republican causes in the lead up to Bush's taking power in 2000. But no, I mean, this is a guy, Eric Prince, and a company that has very deep connections, not just to the administration, but also to the military, to the intelligence community, to the State Department. And so, you know, I think Blackwater has been remarkably adept at using its behind-the-scenes connections and its military connections to win very lucrative contracts. But Blackwater was not in the mercenary business until 9/11. In fact, Eric Prince was on Bill O'Reilly's show on Fox News shortly after the 9/11 attacks happened, and he says to Bill O'Reilly, you know, I was starting to get a little cynical about how seriously people took training and security, and now the phone is ringing off the hook. And one of the calls that came into Blackwater after 9/11 was from the Central Intelligence Agency, which said, hey, can you guys put together a team of special forces guys to go in covertly to Afghanistan? And so Blackwater began its mercenary operations, we understand, by going into Afghanistan in the early stages of the so-called war on terror. And then the big money started rolling in, though, when the Iraq invasion happened. Blackwater was given a $21 million no-bid contract to protect the viceroy, Paul Bremer. And so that really began the serious work that would lead to literally hundreds of millions of dollars in government contracts in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, the thing that bothers many people about this whole situation, talk about the fact that these private so-called soldiers are subject to no laws because they insist they're civilians.
Right. Well, Blackwater, I should say, has about 2,300 troops actively deployed around the world. And their lobbyists have been at the forefront since 2004 of a campaign to try to stop the military from placing Blackwater and other private soldiers under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, commonly known as the court-martial system.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, we're civilians, you can't court-martial us. At the same time, Blackwater has argued in legal papers filed in the U.S. court system because of wrongful death lawsuits brought against it, that it shouldn't be subjected to civilian litigation because it's part of the U.S. total force in Iraq and elsewhere. It's part of the U.S. war machine, and so it should have the same immunity from civilian litigation that the U.S. military has. So effectively, Blackwater is declaring its forces above the law. You can't court-martial us. You can't sue us in civilian courts. And that's played out in Iraq in a very devastating way. We've had hundreds of thousands of contractors go in and out of Iraq over these 4 years of occupation. Only one of them has been indicted for any crimes or violations, and he wasn't even an armed contractor. So the Bush administration has doubled the Iraq occupation force through the use of the private sector. There are 126,000 private contractors this minute in Iraq, and 130,000 U.S. troops. So you may think that there are 130,000 U.S. forces in Iraq. There are actually 260,000, but we don't count half of them. Their deaths don't get counted in the official toll. Their injuries don't get counted in the official toll. Their crimes go undocumented, unreported, unprosecuted, and unpunished. So we have a shadow army that's operating in Iraq in addition to this, you know, this offensive aggressive war the Bush administration is waging.
That is really frightening. And then the fact that they're unaccountable to U.S. taxpayers, aren't some of these contracts under the guise of Homeland Security?
Well, then that gets into a different arena. You have Blackwater operating inside of the United States. After Hurricane Katrina, I was down in New Orleans, and I encountered Blackwater guys on the streets on Bourbon Street. I was talking to two New York City police officers. An unmarked car speeds up. These three huge guys get out. They're dressed in flak jackets, khaki uniforms. wielding M4 machine guns, and they ask the New York cops, where are the rest of the Blackwater guys? And the police say, oh, they're down the street here. And I said to the police, you mean Blackwater, like the guys in Iraq? And he said, oh, yeah, they're all over the place. So I went and found some of the Blackwater men in New Orleans, and I asked them, what's going on down here? What are you guys doing here? And they said, our boss sent us down to help. And I said, and what's your mission here? And he said, well, we're here to confront criminals and stop looters. And I asked, under whose authority are you operating? One of them showed me a gold law enforcement badge. He said he'd been deputized by the governor of the state of Louisiana. And it turns out that the Bush administration, in fact, had hired Blackwater through the Department of Homeland Security to engage in so-called security operations in the hurricane zone. The guys on the ground told me they were making about $350 a day for being there, and they were complaining that that wasn't enough money and that there was no action there. Some of them had just been in Iraq 2 weeks earlier. So anyway, they're making $350 a day. When I got Blackwater's contracts for New Orleans, it turns out that the company was billing us, the taxpayers, $950 per day per Blackwater soldier on the ground. So there's a $600 difference between what they were billing us and what they were paying their men on the ground. Tish, at one point they were making about $240,000 a day for their Hurricane Katrina operations. They had 600 people stretching from Texas through Mississippi and the Gulf.
My goodness, this is absolutely unbelievable. Now, do you think this company is dismayed that they haven't been able to stay under the public radar? I know your book is unauthorized. You must have tried to conduct interviews. What happened when you were trying to...
They thanked me for my interest in Blackwater and said they wouldn't be able to accommodate my interview requests. What I did is I filed a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests. I interviewed former Blackwater contractors. Myself and my researcher interviewed several of the people who helped start Blackwater in the 1990s. I talked with a lot of families of guys who had served with Blackwater and tried to cobble together as comprehensive of a picture as I could. I mean, what I think is a really disturbing fact is, I'm a journalist that Blackwater probably views in a hostile way.
Mm.
But Congress people have been unable to get any sense of Blackwater's operations, and when they try to get information on it, they come up against an iron curtain, basically. In fact, one Congress member told me that when she goes in to ask for Blackwater's contracts or other private military contracts, that she's only allowed to see them in a closed room, and she can't write anything down or talk about what she's seen. So such is the state of affairs of transparency in these operations.
So do you think the main thing that the American people should be worried about in regard to this organization is the secrecy and the fact that they are really working without any accountability?
Well, let's look at one of the things that is made possible by the use of these mercenaries. The Bush administration failed to build a coalition of willing nations to invade and occupy Iraq.
Right.
They cobbled together, a few poor countries and Britain, and the poor countries they basically, blackmailed into participating.
Mm-hmm.
But what a company like Blackwater does for the administration is it internationalizes the occupation. Blackwater goes into a country like Chile. 92% of Chileans are opposed to the war. Chile was a rotating member of the Security Council opposing the invasion of Iraq. Blackwater goes in and hires up Chilean soldiers, Chilean mercenaries, some of whom trained and served under the brutal regime of Augusto Pinochet. They then ship those guys to Iraq to participate in the occupation in contravention of the will of the Chilean people and the democratically elected government of Chile.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you see is these companies subverting not only the sovereignty of other nations, but chiseling away at democracy in this country as well, because what they're doing is they're keeping a draft off the table, which of course would be politically unpopular, and they're allowing the administration to double the occupation force simply by paying people more money to go and serve as cannon fodder or killers in the war, and so this really I see as one of the most significant threats to American democracy in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that you wrote this book. It's a fascinating book, by the way. Have you heard any disputing of the facts in your book? Has anybody started speaking out on the other side?
No. I mean, I get attacked by wacko attackos on Amazon, and clearly they haven't even read the book. I mean, the fact of the matter is I've got over 2,000 footnotes in this book. It was independently fact-checked by multiple people. It was reviewed by lawyers. We spent endless time going through the facts of this book. And if we couldn't back it up, it didn't go in the book. And so I have no one has come forward to say that I've gotten anything wrong, except there's one typo in the book. It says summer of 2007 when it should have said summer of 2006. To my mind, that's the only legitimate factual error that anyone's raised, and it actually was just a typo. So, no, I'd be very surprised if someone comes forward and says that this just isn't true, because it's all meticulously documented.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jeremy Scahill. He's an award-winning investigative journalist, and we're talking about his book, Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. So, Jeremy, let's talk about this incident that everybody was on the radar of, almost everybody in this country, the incident in Fallujah in March of 2004. Talk to us about that.
Right. Well, this was perhaps the day that the war turned. March 31st, 2004, 9:30 in the morning, a Blackwater convoy pulls in the center of Fallujah. The mission that day was to escort three empty flatbed trucks being driven by Iraqis to the other side of Fallujah, pick up some kitchen equipment, bring it back to the other side, and drop it off at a U.S. military base. So when they pull into the city, there's a lead vehicle. It's an unarmored Pajero Jeep. It just had a reinforced bumper, but it wasn't an armored vehicle. And inside of that was a driver from Blackwater and a navigator from Blackwater. They should have had a third guy in that vehicle, but they were sent out short, two men, and so they didn't have a rear gunner. Behind that lead vehicle were the three flatbed trucks, and then there was another Pajero Jeep, again being driven by a Blackwater contractor and then a navigator, but there was no rear gunner to that one either. So they pull into the center of Fallujah at 9:30 in the morning. They hit some sort of a roadblock. Iraqi resistance fighters come up on the rear vehicle. They just shoot up the guys inside of it. Because they're unarmored vehicle, they were able to just literally pierce through the door and windshield. And so they immediately kill those two guys. The lead vehicle realizes an ambush is underway, and they either try to get off the X, meaning get away from the scene, or to turn around and try to recover their comrades. But because they were also in unarmored vehicles and didn't have a rear gunner, the resistance fighters were easily able to overtake them. And then what happened after that was this macabre, gruesome attack on the bodies of these men. They were burned in the streets. Their bodies were dragged through Fallujah. Two of them were strung up from a bridge over the Euphrates River. And their bodies remained there for about 10 hours. And 300 people from Fallujah were dancing in the streets, and people had signs that said Fallujah is the graveyard of the Americans. And of course, what happened after that is that the Bush administration responded with a merciless revenge attack against the people in the city of Fallujah, carrying out 37,000 airstrikes, killing hundreds of people, displacing thousands upon thousands from their homes. And it really inflamed the Iraqi resistance that haunts the U.S. occupation to this day. It really was the week that the war turned, and it all started with the killing of four, not U.S. soldiers, not civilians, but private soldiers for Blackwater.
Mm-hmm. Well, why do you think the press has gone along with the fact of not calling them mercenaries, but calling them private contractors?
Yeah, well, I mean, even I fall victim to that. I call them military contractors, mm-hmm. security contractors. It's part of the game. You know, this has been a sophisticated rebranding campaign, and Blackwater has been at the forefront of it. A contractor sounds like water specialists or guys building a pipeline or, you know, people fixing up an apartment building. That's what we all think of when we hear the word contract.
That's what
In fact,
I thought
the mothers
were.
Of mm-hmm. Of those guys killed at Fallujah, you know, I've gotten to know them very well, and they said when we heard contractors had been killed, it didn't even occur to us that they were talking about our sons, because we thought of contractors as being construction workers. And I think that it's part of the terminology that peppers our time, the times in which we live, where we never call a spade a spade. War is good and mm-hmm. and it's profitable, and in order to sustain that, you have to convince people that your terms are the accurate ones. So Blackwater doesn't call itself a mercenary company. It refers to itself as a member of the peace and stability industry.
Yeah.
Their trade association is called, it's like taking a page from Orwell, it's called the International Peace Operations Association, and its logo is a cartoon sleeping lion, like something from Disney. So it's an indicator of the times that we're living in.
Yeah, it is very much like 1984. So after this Fallujah incident, haven't there been several lawsuits that the families have filed against Blackwater? Well, what's the status of those right now?
Right. Well, the families, I think, like anyone who was in that situation, I mean, they didn't assume malice on the part of Blackwater. I mean, they thought that Blackwater was this patriotic American company supporting, you know, the United States. And so they just started to ask questions. What happened? What were they doing in Fallujah? I understand the military wouldn't even go into Fallujah, not to mention in unarmored vehicles. And they're asking these questions, and they said that they were getting no answers. And eventually, after, you know, they say Blackwater stonewalled them, refused to be transparent, one of the mothers met with a Blackwater representative, and the mother, Donna Zavko, demanded to see the incident report from the company on the Fallujah ambush. She wanted to know what happened to her son and why it happened. And she says that a Blackwater representative angrily told her that it's a classified document, you'll have to sue us to get it. And so the families did just that. In January of 2005, they filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Blackwater, saying the company had defrauded their men, sent them in unarmored vehicles, short two men, without heavy weaponry, without maps, into a city that the U.S. military wouldn't even go into. And Blackwater has enlisted high-powered lawyers. The original lawyer working for Blackwater was none other than Fred Fielding, who's currently Bush's White House counsel. The next lawyer that the company had was Ken Starr, the man who led the impeachment charge against President Clinton. So Kenneth Starr takes it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and even the Republican-dominated Supreme Court, with a Chief Justice appointed by President Bush, rejected Blackwater's petitions. And so now the case is set to be heard in state court in North Carolina, where there would be no cap on damages. I mean, many people in the industry are watching this very closely because they feel that it very well could be like the tobacco litigation of the 90s. Once that first domino falls, it sets off a chain reaction. So this is a very important case, and it could end up beginning as early as this month.
Hmm. Did that Fallujah incident make Blackwater change its M.O. at all?
No, well, I mean, I don't know necessarily about its M.O., but what I do know is that the day after the ambush, Blackwater hired a high-powered lobbying firm called the Alexander Strategy Group, and within a week, Eric Prince and other Blackwater executives were sitting down with the men who literally ran Congress. Their lobbyists were former senior staffers of Tom DeLay. So they go in and they're meeting with all of these powerhouse legislators. And within a couple months after that, you know, the ambush happened on March 31st, 2004. In June of 2004, Blackwater was given one of the most lucrative security contracts the federal government has. They were contracted for $300 million to provide diplomatic security. So I call it making a killing off the killings. Mm. In fact, Senator John Warner called them our silent partner in the war on terror. And this, you know, so this is a company that shot to fame or infamy, depending on how you look at it, and has done a very effective job of capitalizing on that infamy.
And so you wrote this expose, and what do you hope to have happen from it if more and more people read the book?
Well, one thing is that's very concrete is I want the Democrats to wake up to the radical privatization agenda. I want the Democrats to not leave contractors out of their withdrawal discussions, because to ignore the contractors is to ignore half the occupation force.
Exactly.
I also want to ring an alarm bell among people in this country that this is a great threat to American democracy and sovereignty of nations around the world. This is the privatization of war. These are unaccountable forces waging war in our name with our money, and they're engaged in secretive shadow wars around the world. And this is this cuts against the fabric, I think, of what most Americans believe to be their country. And I think a lot of us are standing back and saying, where do we live?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I heard that Representative Henry Waxman was going to begin an investigation. Is that the case?
Yeah, he started. He had his first hearing on Blackwater on February 7th in Washington. I was down there for it. And, you know, it was certainly a start. I mean, we got some answers about some of Blackwater's contracts that have been lingering around unanswered since 2004. I mean, it took Henry Waxman, who's perhaps Congress's lead investigator, from November of 2004 until February of 2007 to get an answer as to who those four Blackwater men that got killed in Fallujah were ultimately working for, whose contract it was that they were subcontracted under, and how much we paid for their services. And it turns out it was KBR, the former Halliburton subsidiary. And so KBR, as a result of that hearing, was forced to give back to the federal government about $20 million for unauthorized use of private security companies when they should have only been using the U.S. military. But if you take that one incident and you replicate it across the board with these 126,000 contractors, you realize no one's paying attention. No one's going after them. There's no transparency. There's no oversight whatsoever. The Pentagon can't even tell Congress exactly how many contractors there are, what they're doing, where they're deployed, how many have been killed, how many have been injured, how many have been prosecuted. There's no answers to those questions right now, even under the Democratic-controlled Congress. So my hope is that Waxman's opening salvo against the contractor industry, the war industry, is going to result in some stiff legislation that's going to really crack down on the use of mercenaries.
And since you finished writing this book, are you going to continue following this story and trying to find out what Blackwater is up to?
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, I'm going to be going as I tour around the country with this book. I'm going to be stopping in Mount Carroll, Illinois, which is where Blackwater just opened its new private military base. I'm going to go out to San Diego, California, where Blackwater is fighting fierce grassroots local resistance to an attempt to build another military base, a private military base in California. And I'm following this story very, very closely, and I'm going to continue writing articles about the company and investigating its operations. It's hard because I'm running all around now and I'm sort of living out of a suitcase, but I definitely plan and continue to follow the operations. And, people crawl out of the woodwork when you do a book on a company like this. You start to get contacted by people who worked for them or know people that worked for them, and so keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, the story continues. Is there a place where people can contact you, or is there a website they can go to for more information?
Yeah, my website, which Blackwater actually sent me a letter saying I needed to take down, and of course I'm not going to, is called blackwaterbook.com.
And then that's how they can contact you.
Yeah, on blackwaterbook.com there's contact information. There's a schedule of cities I'm going to be in, and then there's more information on the book, and also if people are interested in buying the book, they can get it from the website. They also can watch some videos and other things.
Great. Jeremy Scahill, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm so glad you're on this story.
Well, thank you, Tish. I really appreciate all your work.
Bye-bye. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by Finger Lakes Arts Grants and Services. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.